Talking about the body toxic, how the hazardous chemistry of everyday things threatens our health and our well-being. You know, it's not just an appropriate song about shaking your body, but also about the hazards of chemicals on the body. When you look at Michael Jackson, you get a feeling he's living the body toxic. Nina Baker is our guest on this, and it's just fascinating. Book just came out. She's a former staff writer for the Arizona Republic, but she's written for many other organizations, and you might have heard about her work. She won lots of awards for her investigation of Nike's Indonesian factories in the early 1900s. That led to improvements for workers. And actually, we can even start there with Nike and many other corporations that are responsible for chemicals in the environment that end up in your body that you would never guess. I mean, some you might think about, right? I mean, some petrochemical company somewhere, whatever. But who else that are would not be in your list of the usual suspects are affecting your bodies right now? The body toxic. We'll talk about what's floating around in your system. What is your body filtering from the environment, only to have it stay forever in your bones, in your soft tissue, and sadly in your organs, and what it means to your future? Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. I got the book earlier, just within about the last 48 hours. I've only just had a chance to read it, but the more I was reading it, the more it's making me look at absolutely everything I'm eating, where I'm eating it, what I'm eating it off of, what I'm breathing, what's in front of me. It's kind of a spooky horror story in a way. The body toxic, how the hazardous chemistry of everyday things threatens our health and well-being. Good evening, Nina Baker. Nina Baker, do we hear Nina? Nina once? Okay. Guys?
Hello.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Yes,
how are
hello.
You? There, sorry. Some toggle somewhere hadn't been flipped. So thank you so much. I mean, I guess, because it really, I mean, and I almost don't want my wife to see this book because she's already super freaked out about the possible contamination that lurks around us at all times, that sometimes it's really hard, like even with baby bottles or plastic water bottles or other things, she just, you know, she's becoming somewhat of a, what some people might think of as paranoid, but the more I read your book, the more I realize she's just plain old right. Let me just start with a general question of, what is floating around in our bodies right now? Just give some of the garden variety things that we might have in our systems that, say, our parents might not have, or our grandparents would never even have had to think about.
Sure. We have chemicals that are used to make everything from plastics to soaps to toys to food wrappers to clothing and carpeting. And what's different is that these are man-made chemicals that can interfere with the body's reproductive, developmental, and behavioral systems. So really, since World War II, we've introduced thousands of chemicals into our universe and into our products, and they've served some very good uses, but they also come with some costs that we're just now beginning to measure and really understand. So your wife is correct to be concerned about
hate that
things in baby bottles and
yes,
in food wrapping. But I do think that as we gain more knowledge, we can make some better decisions as consumers and as a society, so that it's not a totally bleak picture.
Yeah, you know, and yet chemicals are hard to get out. I mean, once they're in your system, aren't they kind of there forever?
Well, yes and no. Some chemicals we metabolize very quickly. I write about a chemical in my book called phthalates, and it's a chemical that has a million and one uses. It's in everything from PVC plastic to consumer products, cosmetics, it's it's gone really from our bodies in a matter of hours. But what's happening is we're exposed so frequently that it's always detectable.
Right. Sort of always there. It's always passing. Always passing through.
On the other end of the spectrum, there are chemicals that are extremely persistent and never ever break down in the environment. It's really kind of hard to get your mind around in a way. But another chemical that is really interesting and somewhat scary is a family of chemicals called perfluorinated chemicals. And you've probably heard a bit about some of the controversy about how these are used in making Teflon surfaces.
Right.
They're also the chemical that's used in making the food wrappers and the microwave popcorn bags resistant to grease. And scientists believe that these chemicals, once they're released, never ever break down in the environment. So, you know, some of the things that we were concerned about earlier as our society came to recognize that PCBs and DDT had a very long life once they were in the environment, these perfluorinated chemicals make those things look absolutely ephemeral.
Well, let's get back to some of those other chemicals and focus here on, because it's on the cover of your book. Obviously, it's a big part of your discussion. The idea, and right away I got, I don't think it's a coincidence that the Teflon pan that's exhibited in the cover of your book has scratches in it and looks worn down, because this is the key part. It's not a matter of just, you know, cooking an egg over a brand new Teflon surface, but it's the wear and tear on these Teflon surfaces and where that former Teflon stuff goes, which of course goes largely right into the food, which then you slide out of the Teflon pan right onto your plate. So let's talk about that. The Teflon coating itself and some of these other things. What is the danger? What would it do? What can we see as being a direct result of all of these Teflon coatings breaking down over time and getting into our scrambled eggs?
Well, Teflon itself is a pretty interesting a place to start the discussion, because Teflon is these PFCs are used in making Teflon, but Teflon itself is not a perfluorinated chemical. So there's a lot of discussion about, you know, is Teflon, these Teflon pans, are they really problematic when you talk about how we're exposed to perfluorinated chemicals? And really, I think that what the latest science is showing, what the latest research is showing, is that the food wrappings, fast food, some of the fast food wrappings or pizza boxes or, again, the microwave popcorn bags, anything that has a perfluorinated coating that would help resist grease is really what scientists are finding is sort of the easiest way for these chemicals to migrate into your food, which then migrate into your body, which then enter your body. And
where do they go?
Well,
these chemicals.
A lot of the chemicals are fat loving, so they will they're attracted to fatty tissue. And
When you say fat loving, I hear Ian loving.
I hear, then
that'll be all over me then, because they'll have their choice of places they'd like to hide in my body. Then if they're fat loving, what will they do? What over time will they do?
Well, that's what I think is sort of the $64,000 question. I think that there are researchers in government agencies and in academia who are working very hard on trying to figure out exactly what they'll do. And the best thing that they have to make those kinds of deductions are really animal studies, because it's impossible to deliberately dose a human being with one of these chemicals and then, you know, see what happens. So we're looking at animal studies, and we're also looking at some epidemiological studies, which will, that's when the scientist sort of tries to figure out what's happened after a certain group of people
sure.
has been exposed.
Cause and effect.
Cause and effect, yeah. So essentially, though, one of the things I find really fascinating about perfluorinated chemicals is that there is a link to obesity. And what they think might be happening is that when a developing fetus is exposed to perfluorinated chemical in the womb, and this is a good place to explain that every baby born is born with a chemical load. There, unfortunately, these pollutants travel through the umbilical cord and cross the placenta, and so you know the exposures begin in utero. And the theory is that when if a fetus receives a dose, even a low dose of this particular chemical at a certain point of development, it sets them up. It sort of does something to the way that their metabolism is regulated over their lifetime. So it would set them up for abnormal weight gain. And so scientists are really trying to figure out, well, what's the mechanism for that? And you know, how is that? How does that work? I mean, they're seeing this in animals. But there's no reason that what they're seeing in these lab animals it wouldn't work the same way in humans. At least that's what they believe at the moment. And this work is actually coming out of, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency. These are government research biologists who are, you know, trying to drill down and figure out exactly how this particular chemical, which again never breaks down in the environment and is very, very slow to break down in humans, has a very long half-life.
Right.
How they may be related to obesity and
maybe it makes your fat cells Teflon coated and less likely to get burned off in exercise.
Maybe you should tell the EPA researchers about that theory.
Yeah, that's my theory. So babies are getting. Does this mean then that has the government ever issued a warning when it comes to microwave popcorn and pregnant women?
No.
Okay.
No.
What are these? Are these chemicals considered safe by the government? Like the one the PVC. I mean that or the Teflon. Has the government actually tested and said, "Nah, go ahead, eat away. We're all good."
Well, at this moment, there's a disconnect really between government regulators who try to figure out what amount of a chemical you can be exposed to before it causes harm, and the hazards that are being identified by these research biologists, and so. You know, research biologists are finding all sorts of really, reasons for consumers to be concerned and most of all to be, you know, informed about these things. But regulators, at least in the way our chemical regulatory scheme is set up, are not acting because their risk assessment models don't trigger an action.
These chemicals, such as what comes from microwave popcorn or from the breaking down of a Teflon pan, end up in our fat tissue. And you mentioned that obesity is one cause and effect that may be related to that. Have we seen an increase that makes you as an investigative researcher in this, or government people, or even academia with whom you've spoken? Do they see a causal relationship that they wonder about, say, between like these PVC chemicals from microwave popcorn and I'm making something up here, the rise of cases of pinky nail cancer, where they can see a specific thing that they think might be related to it that's kind of scary and out on the edge, but they're looking at it?
Sure. There's actually a kind of a long list of things, and again, this is not just only tied to or associated with the perfluorinated chemicals that I've just been talking about. But when you look at these endocrine disrupting chemicals, and the chemicals that I write about in my book are all endocrine disruptors. That means that they somehow have an effect on the hormone system and are either causing errant signals to be sent or missed signals, you know, when the hormone is the messenger and the receptor isn't getting the signal, or it's getting the signal at the wrong time, or somehow just throwing off that really exquisitely delicate system. What you can see are disorders and diseases that are on the rise in humans. Again, these are things that they see happen in lab animals. But, you know, it's not a pretty list. It includes things like breast and testicular cancer and brain cancer, lowered sperm count, early puberty, endometriosis, and other problems with female reproductive systems, diabetes, obesity, which we talked about a minute ago, neurological problems like attention deficit disorder and autism, and then autoimmune, you know, problems like asthma, right, things like that.
Yeah, asthma is amazing how much it's risen in it. It's so much so that I'm just seeing these commercials for asthma meds, asthma medications, especially asthma products for kids. I remember there used to be, you know, Bob Gibson, you probably don't remember this, but he's a pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals, and he came out and talked about asthma a little bit, and there was always be like one or two products. They're everywhere with this Advair thing. I mean, they're pushing. So that is one of those environmental issues, it seems like, that so many people, so many more people are getting asthma. And the air is, in many places, in many cities, cleaner than what it was 20 years ago, and still more people are getting asthma.
That's true. And in fact, the prevalence or the childhood prevalence of asthma has more than doubled from 1980 to 2001. It went from about 3.5% to 9% in all children. And overall, the childhood asthma has more than doubled in 20 years. So, you know, the advertisers are spending their money well, because there are a lot of potential users out there, unfortunately.
Right. And I mean, I'm sure it's a great product and it's going to keep people from dying and all, but it really makes you wonder, because, I mean, especially within some populations, and maybe you've got something on this, because I don't have it in front of me, but my impression was from some hospital work I'd done that African American kids were getting hit with these asthma increases more than the white population as a whole.
Yeah, I don't have that in front of me, but okay. it does sound somewhat familiar, I think.
Yeah, and that sounds like something that would be environmental to some of these urban centers. Something's going on that's creating this reaction in the lungs. And well, we're just getting started with The Body Toxic, how the hazardous chemistry of everyday things threatens our health and well-being. Nina Baker is the writer for the Arizona, well, former writer for the Arizona Republic and for other publications, working on this book. What is it that when you started working on this book, you stopped eating, or you stopped allowing into your house even?
Well, I removed all plastic food storage containers from the kitchen, and really it's because plastic and heat don't mix very well.
So no microwave plastic containers in your house?
Yeah, just use glass or ceramic.
It's all right. We'll talk more about that. We'll talk more about what's in the plastic containers, why you might want to reconsider microwaving plastic containers, coming up in just a second, what it might be doing to your body, The Body Toxic. And then I also want to find out more about non-food related threats. Like, what are just some of the things that are floating around that we absorb into our bodies, and some of the other ways in which that's affecting us all? Something to keep out an eye on. The Body Toxic next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. I think we're going to get to calls early for Nina Baker, because so many folks out there are worried about the things that have been in their personal environment. how the hazardous chemistry of everyday things threatens our health and well-being. The body toxic. We'll continue this conversation in just a second. Ever heard that? I don't know what we can refer. Not an axiom. Is it a canard? I can never remember the categories of these things. But something that people used to say, I just don't think, I don't know if it's true. Could be apocryphal. That the chemicals in our body are worth about $24. That we have so many chemicals in our body. I don't have any science of this. I just remember somebody saying once that we have so many chemicals in our body that if we could strain them out, it would be worth $24. Well, maybe that was 15 years ago. So maybe now they're worth $50 now, or maybe $100 now if they're petrochemicals. But I'm curious whether there is a way of looking at the accumulative value of the chemicals that are in our system. And since Nina Baker brought it up last hour, we're talking about some of these chemicals that interrupt our body systems and that cause chaos within our body systems, therefore causing, for example, early puberty in 7- and 8-year-old girls, or for that matter, female growth of body parts and a physical reaction to female hormones that come from the birth control pills that are in our water supply. We'll find out the latest on next coming up on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Don't know where to get back into it again with Nina Baker. There's so many different ways. First of all, let's, I guess, pick up where we left off. Not microwaving from plastic containers. I think that's something that everybody does. Most people do. People do it at work all day long. I'll go to work and there's a small line in front of the microwave of people with different things that they brought from home in plastic. But then again, there's a bunch of people who are trying to microwave popcorn. Who's more dangerous, the microwave popcorn eaters or the people who are microwaving plastic from home? Nina?
Well, it sort of depends on who you are, not what's more dangerous. If you're a pregnant woman, or if you're thinking you're going to be pregnant, or if you're, heating things up to feed to a child, then definitely those are probably more hazardous situations. Because as we spoke about a little earlier, it really is the developing fetus that is most sensitive to these exposures. So, if you're at work and if you have a pregnant colleague, please encourage her not to do those things, microwave popcorn or microwave plastic.
And even if, as a pregnant woman, that what she craves more than anything on the planet is microwave popcorn, you can still have popcorn. Just find a way to make it using oil and corn, like
the
old days.
Do it the old-fashioned way.
All right. So I have more questions for you like that too. But let's also then digress to the thing I threw out there about the $24 worth of chemicals in your body. I don't know what category that falls into, wives' tale, whatever. But I somebody said it once, and it sort of stuck in my head that the chemicals that end up in our bodies actually have a value, and they have a measurable amount, a cumulative amount, that at one point some company, some manufacturer somewhere paid cash money for the chemicals that end up free in my body.
Wow. That sounds like something they may have, fooled around with a bit at one of the world fairs where they used to have these big exhibits of, House of the Future and that sort of thing. In my book, I talk about how really baby boomers are the first generation, that we're all sort of like children of the synthetic age, because we were born into this era of kind of mid-century chemical marvels. And so we're kind of the first generation to experience these man-made substances as part of, for us, what was, our natural order. So, you're outside playing with polyethylene hula hoops, and you're eating from these very colorful melamine dishes, and you're drinking from the unbreakable polystyrene cups. And if you lived in the right part of the country, of course, you were running behind the DDT truck that was cruising through the neighborhood, spraying that cloud of DDT. And your mom's in the kitchen cooking on Teflon and putting the leftovers in Saran wrap. And you got countertops covered in formica. And, the list just goes on. It's all, these were all new and really kind of fun and useful and convenient applications of these chemicals. But as I said earlier, we're just now beginning to understand that in some cases there are costs that
Right.
we're just beginning to add up. Even if it, I can't tell you exactly the worth of chemicals in my own body, but I did have my blood analyzed for the presence of certain chemicals as part of my research. And it was really interesting. I kind of had an idea of what would be in there because the Centers for Disease Control has been following people on a and they've been reporting now for a few years about what they're finding on a in a representative sample of the U.S. population. So even though things like DDT and PCBs were banned 30 years ago, they're still detectable. Because they're very persistent. The good
Sure.
news is that because we've taken steps to reduce the use of these things and thereby reduce exposures, the levels in blood are going down. But for some of the chemicals that I write about and really focus on in the book, things like bisphenol A, which is the backbone of polycarbonate plastic. Again, we're talking about the baby bottles and sort of the sport, the Nalgene type bottles that people carry around. You know, those things were just they're measuring those and they are ubiquitous in the population.
Sure. Yeah. Well, because we grew up in the era of better living through chemistry.
Right, we're all poster children, really.
Yeah, that commercial stayed in my head for years. It was DuPont, wasn't it? And it was better living through chemistry. And if it had a chemical in it or it had a fancy name, it actually made it more attractive to the consumer. They're like,
yeah.
Wow, it's got a big, long name that I can't pronounce. I got to eat that or whatever. I mean, it was very scary. And that DDT thing, the DDT trucks is spraying for mosquitoes, that isn't always a thing of the past. Aren't there versions of DDT that they still use for, you know, to get rid of for like mosquito abatement to this day? Isn't there?
Yeah, there. I think you're right about that. I think there are some very limited uses, but in general, the kind of widespread use is a thing of the past. And you know, DDT is still controversial because in certain developing countries, there might be a very good argument for using it. But again, there have been regulations put into place about DDT, so that we're seeing a lot less of it these days.
I had I had kind of an experience reading your book when it came in the mail on Thursday. And the day before, I had used a very strong chemical to get rid of a clog in a drain, because I had tried some other things and I tried using these organic products. And I'll just be honest with you, as much as I wish they worked as well as these nasty things with skulls and crossbones on them, they just didn't. They hadn't been working. One thing was supposed to microbially eat the clog over time and whatever, and it didn't. And so I just went, all right, that's it. So I went to the hardware store and I got something that looked like it was out of a movie. It had so many big giant skulls on it, and don't, you know, all these warnings, you know, use in a ventilated area, use with a mask. I mean, I followed all the instructions, and I poured it down my bathtub drain, and when it killed the clog, you could hear it, even though the clog was, I don't know, you know, how many feet down in the pipe, you could hear it. And then it actually sort of gave up the ghost, so to speak. A little mist kind of burped out of the drain, and it was like the soul of the clog, and it was on its way up to heaven. And yet I had that terrible feeling after I started reading your book. Oh, no, you know, what if I unleashed upon the environment? Any idea what those types of the cleaning products, the just the sort of daily household products that we use to make our house more sanitary, how those are ending up in our body?
Well, yeah, we're in through many of the same ways that the chemicals we've already talked about are. They're in the air. We breathe them. We touch them, and some come through the skin. They get into the food chain, and one really interesting thing that's caused me to clean my house a lot more since I started doing the research on this book is that house dust, those dust bunnies, you know, that if you any place you can find dust on your window blind, your mini blind, the dust is full of these pollutants, and interestingly, it's one reason that our pets and our children actually are taking in some of these chemicals proportionally sort of in a greater quantity than we are as adults because of where they are on the floor and you know the hand to mouth behaviors of a baby and the grooming behaviors of your pet and in one recent I think fascinating preliminary study some researchers at the EPA made a correlation between this epidemic of hyperthyroidism in house cats and these flame retardants that are used in television sets and home electronics. There's a correlation between these type of flame retardants, polybrominated flame retardants, and effects on the thyroid.
And that's because the cats walk around the computers, they sit on TVs, that kind of thing?
Yeah, they love to, you know, it's warm. I have a cat, three cats, and they're always looking for a spot on the on something warm. And so if it's close to the computer or close to the TV or, you know, that's very attractive to them.
And what is it doing to them? What's the effect?
The effect is that it's causing a problem with their thyroids, the hyperthyroidism, and that causes a cat to lose weight very rapidly, and there's some secondary health problems associated with that, with the heart, and it really diminishes a cat's quality of life. And there, as cats age, although there is hyperthyroidism in younger cats, but older cats in this particular EPA study that I was talking about, the ones that they looked at with hyperthyroidism, had three times higher levels of this particular flame retardant in their blood than the younger cats that did not have hyperthyroidism. So just an interesting study that, you know, may suggest that cats in this case are sort of sentinels for humans. And, you know, that there is a concern, of course, that these flame retardants are having effects on human thyroid function as well.
Very interesting. And that's let me go back to something you were talking about before then, the baby bottles and the plastic sport bottles. What was that thing, phenol A or something? What was that called?
It's called bisphenol A.
Okay. And yeah. And what's that effect? How does that come? I mean, I imagine that's the heated plastic, for example, from a baby bottle when you're heating up the formula. But what is it that they think that is causing a problem with? Do we have a specific result for bisphenol A?
Yes. Bisphenol A is actually a really interesting one to talk about because there are a number of concerns about bisphenol A, and it's also probably the most controversial at the moment because just a week ago, a little over a week ago, the FDA came out with a preliminary hazard assessment on bisphenol A because of some concerns that had been raised by some researchers on bisphenol A, as well as Canada deciding that it was a dangerous substance and they were going to ban it in baby bottles. They were going to require that all baby bottles be made with some other kind of substance. But these scientists that raised this red flag about bisphenol A, these are 38 experts from all over the world. Some of them work for U.S. government agencies. And they got together. They were so concerned about this that they got together and they wrote a consensus statement, and they published it in this scientific journal called Reproductive Toxicology. And they were really worried because their expertise led them to the conclusion that about 95% of the U.S. population has a blood level of bisphenol A within a range that's predicted by this group to be biologically active, and they're concerned that the adverse effects they were seeing in lab studies, and we're talking about dozens, I mean 150 or 200 lab studies, are of great concern because the effects are similar to what we're seeing happening in humans and what the recent trends in human diseases like, again, breast and prostate cancer, increases in urogenital abnormalities in male babies, decline in semen quality in men, and the early onset of puberty in girls, and the list goes on. It's stunning that really kind of the world's best brains on bisphenol A are this concerned about this particular substance,
right,
that they would gather in this way.
And that seems like such a waste because it's so easy to say have a glass baby bottle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not that hard. It's not like we're replacing something which we can't find a way around. I mean, a plastic baby bottle is pretty replaceable. There's a lot of other options out there that we got by with for years. But what about the rubber nipples for the baby bottles? Wouldn't those have some sort of off-gassing as well?
You know, I'm not sure about the rubber nipples. I think those are made of, are they made of silicone?
I don't know. See, that's why I'm suspicious of everything because of your book. I'm looking at, I have plastic gloves just to handle the Bic pen I've got in my hand right now.
Well, really the best thing if it's at all possible is to breastfeed. Unfortunately,
sure.
These contaminants that are in us, that are in a mom, are expressed through breast milk, and so it is true that your baby is going to be exposed to whatever is in you through breastfeeding, but every agency from the World Health Organization to the CDC. And others just strongly recommend breastfeeding.
Sure.
It's the very best way to go.
And talk to me real quickly about, you mentioned the abnormalities, the genital abnormalities of men. What does that mean?
Well, there's been an increase actually in babies born with certain types of defects of the penis. And one is called hypospadias, which is actually the opening of the penis is at, not on the tip, but
right. If you have to surgically close one and open one, otherwise it's going to be difficult when he goes to school.
This is actually something that has been increasing, the prevalence of this is
really.
Yeah.
And that could be related to this dysphenol A thing.
Well, it could, it really is something that, in that particular case, I know that there's been a lot of discussion about phthalates, and again, that phthalates are a very widely used plasticizer, kind of, same type of applications as bisphenol A, are used in the same type of products. It's not the same type of application, but they're used in similar types of products, and there's something called phthalate syndrome, I believe, is what the scientists call that. And
then hang on to that thought. We'll come back to phthalate syndrome. It's the body toxic, how the hazardous chemistry of everyday things threatens our health and well-being. We will get to calls early next hour. Not just a minute or two, but toward the bottom of next hour. Nina Baker on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Ponet.